Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. I am filmmaker Kira Gardner, and I am here with my special effects makeup artist dad, Tony Gardner.
And I am still Tony Gardner, special effects makeup dad.
Yes. In today's episode, we are talking about his work in Army of Darkness.
Yes, the Sam Raimi spectacular.
Yes, from 1993 it came out and is the third movie of the Evil Dead franchise. And we get into my dad's work on Evil Dead 2 right before, and then get into...
Which is very minor.
Yes, for Doug Beswick's studio. And then getting into Army of Darkness, we talk about them creating Evil Ash and other versions.
Lots of iterations of Ash. Good Ash, bad Ash, stretchy Ash, skeletal Ash.
All the Ashes, as yes. well as working with various other companies to make an Army of the Darkness. Mm-hmm. And new technology that was coming to fruition around this time that were able to help them fully realize Sam Raimi's vision.
Yeah.
And basically what it was like to work on that movie.
There you go.
And speaking to how much Alterian and my dad's team had to do for this movie, I want to show you guys a photo of their line items of all the different makeups and effects they had to do of the film. It is easy to hear how hard this was, but to see it all of everything that went in to this movie is really incredible. And to talk about Army of Darkness, we need to go back in time, pun intended, to Evil Dead 2. That's where a film that you have also worked on with Sam Raimi.
Yes.
And I'm just curious because when I've asked my dad about Evil Dead 2, it was something that he did under somebody else's studio, so it's not like we do our whole own episode about it, but yeah. I just figured I'd ask you some questions of what it was like working on Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, I worked for Doug Beswick Productions on Evil Dead 2, and we were responsible for the giant, I think they call it Rotten Apple Head, the head that comes through the door in the cabin in the very end, and it has Bruce's face stuck to it and a couple other people that have been possessed. And one sort of sticks out as a puppet. But the face is just basically trying to get in the door. And then we also built a tree branch that comes through and wraps up Bruce Campbell and tries to feed Bruce into the mouth of the giant head. And then our studio was also responsible for the stop motion dance that Linda did when her head's cut off and it gets put back on her body and the head's normal and the body's all rotted out. Doug Beswick was animating that himself. So a bunch of us were responsible for the art side of it. Jim Belhovic built the cabin. Steve Wang sculpted the puppet. Doug and Yancey Calzada did the armature, if memory serves. And then Doug actually filmed it in his shop. But prior to that, we did the giant tree branch, and that was mostly Mark and Teresa Burkett and pretty much them. And I think Phil and Yancey and Doug built the aluminum armature that worked inside the branch.
Wow.
And then Mark and Teresa skinned it. And then...
What does skin that mean?
Put it, you know, it was a metal machine. So they put the skin on that would look like a tree branch.
I see.
And it was foam and it was constructed and designed so they could move. And then the Rotten Apple Head, I think it was mostly Michael Burnett and myself, and Margaret Prentice came in and she also did painting and stuff like that on it. So it was like a bunch of people that kind of had been on Aliens, and Evil Dead 2 is kind of the more comedic version of Evil Dead, as I've been told, as it's been told to me by fans.
They're very particular.
Yes. And then the end of the film, the vortex in the cabin door ends up pulling Bruce into the vortex, and then you don't know what happens to him. And then that's how Evil Dead 2 ends.
Right.
And what happens in Army of Darkness, which is basically Evil Dead 3, is we find Bruce Campbell's character has landed in
1300 AD or something.
In the past, on Earth, in the Irwindale gravel pit, actually.
That's so funny.
Which is where they did the car drop, which is funny because right now it's probably like 5 miles from here.
Where we're currently recording this podcast. Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. That's wild. Yeah. So what was the vibe like on set for Evil Dead 2? Like Evil Dead 1 had already come out. It had enough success to have a sequel. Like just what was the energy like?
It was great. I mean, we were in the middle of some small community in the South and we were shooting in a high school. And the gym had been turned into the soundstage and the cabin interior was built there and the school wasn't being used. So like down one hall, I remember Tom had the room where he made the book and all that kind of stuff. He had a classroom that had become his shop basically. And then Doug Beswick's studio had another classroom where we had all of our stuff dumped in there. But Tom Sullivan was, I think, he'd like set up camp there and was actually using that classroom as a shop to manufacture stuff. We had to make everything here in California and then ship it out. And then Mark Sjostrom's shop was doing all of the live stuff. And a couple of the guys that became K&B were right. part of Mark's crew. And that's where they, you know, sort of, you know, worked in the trenches together. And then I assume from that decided to start their own company.
Worked in the trenches of a high school.
Yeah. And then from Evil Dead 2 to Army of Darkness is where K&B was formed.
Oh, in that interim.
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow.
And then K&B handled part of Army of Darkness and then Alterian handled part of Army of Darkness.
And K&B is Greg Nicotero,
Howard Berger,
and
Rob Kurtzman.
When you were doing Evil Dead 2, you know, you talk about the fans have told you it's more comedy. Did you guys have that feeling on set that it was already more comedic, or you kind of felt for Evil Dead 2, like as a premise as a whole? And
I don't think we thought anything of it other than it was a lot of really fun stuff to do, and we all liked the script and what we were doing to be part of it. We were just happy to be involved, you know.
Yeah,
there was really not that much of a comparison. These are back in the days where if you wanted to watch Evil Dead, you'd have to hunt it down somehow.
So true.
You don't just go to your computer and look it up.
Up right away.
Yeah.
Watching back to back.
So effort, it required effort. And I think we were all just in the moment.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. And so from Evil Dead is 1987, and now we're at Army of Darkness, which is February 19th, 1993 is when it was released. The perfect movie for Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Yes.
Free Hard Eyes, perfect Valentine's Day.
Yes. Now Hard Eyes is the perfect Valentine's Day movie. We love you, Josh and Devin and all of the people there.
That's the best Valentine's movie.
Yeah. Side note, Hard Eyes is now on Netflix, guys. Go stream it. Show it some love.
Tangent.
So that there can be a sequel. Hard Eyes 2, Electric Boogaloo, The Love Boat.
Yeah.
But
on roller skates.
Let me ask you this. Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell. This was not your first rodeo, knowing Bruce, and I would like to go back in time of how did you guys meet? Because you guys have actually worked on several films together.
I want to say it was Sundown.
Okay.
But I'm not sure, to be honest.
If you met
Ryan. He played
Ryan.
A vampire.
Yes.
And we made fangs for him. That's probably where it
first
started.
Happened.
Yeah.
Yes. Sundown is this movie from
Sundown, A Vampire in Retreat.
Oh, look at that.
Or maybe The Vampire in Retreat. I don't know.
Yes, from some year that I will put on the screen or Jared will put on the screen. And this was like baby mom and dad going out to the Moab Desert in Utah shooting a very indie vampire movie with some
Western.
Yes,
actually.
Vampire Western.
Yeah.
And Bruce Campbell is in that and he plays like the descendant of one of the Van Helsings.
Right.
And turns into a vampire. So you guys met years prior to not only Evil Dead 2, but also Army of Darkness.
Yeah. And then on Evil Dead 2, I mean, we didn't really do much with him as far as makeup effects. We just had to grab him with a tree branch on set. I had to go to set. And then I think it was me and Michael Burnett and I don't remember who else, but we had a puppeteer the branch grabbing him and feeding him to the head. And we also were inside the head, puppeteering the jaw and the eyes looking around. He runs a chainsaw into the eyeball and it sprays a ton of blood. And I think it was Vern, the special effects guy, did the usual Sam Raimi, here's 55-gallon drum of red to spray at a really high PSA. And
yeah. What is that?
It's just fun.
Is that just water with food coloring on a Sam Raimi?
As far as I know, we didn't have to really deal with any of it. But I mean, when it comes out of the walls and everything else, it's just
so great.
It's fun. Yeah.
That whole sequence in Evil Dead 2, I was talking to my dad earlier about it, but when like Bruce is going crazy in the cabin,
oh,
and
yeah,
the furniture starts laughing at him and the deer's laughing at him, and yeah, then the blood in the walls, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, and then Bruce has all the crazy paranoid expressions and Sam has all the great camera moves on top of it, and the music, just there's just so many layers of weird in that
yeah,
whole sequence. It's pretty great.
And that Evil Dead 2 is a little bit more comedic, obviously, than the first Evil Dead. And then Army of Darkness takes it to a new level.
Yeah, there's like Three Stooges gags in it. I mean, it's very comedic the whole way through. And it's definitely a fun ride more than a scary ride.
Yeah.
You know.
Were you excited by sort of this like semi-departure from the norm of the franchise at this point?
I didn't even really think of it as a franchise. I was just like, oh, this is a cool movie. And
we're all back.
We're going to do, you know, Bruce Campbell as a punk rock Frankenstein, and going to do Evil Sheila as sort of like Bride of Frankenstein, and have some fun with them. And, you know,
and
then we got to do everything with Bruce and everything with Sheila. So it was, you know, their possession makeups, but then it was like little Bruce's and Bruce splitting in two, and the eyeball in the
shoulder,
and even his mechanical hand. And I think we even made the vacuform face that had all the cuts in it that was used for his everyday makeup. I mean, basically anything that dealt with Bruce, we got to do the stretchy faces in the book, the stretchy fingers, the hands, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, to sort of go in order.
In story order?
Yeah, in story order.
Okay.
There's
not a lot for a while in the beginning.
Correct. Well, it's a slow, we got to understand where we are, who our main players are, who's this Sheila lady, which, by the way, is the same actress as Miss Honey from Matilda, which is crazy, before she did Matilda.
Yeah, I if memory serves, I want to say this might have been her first film in the U.S.
But the first gag for you guys shows up like even maybe halfway through or even more so.
Maybe, I don't know.
But it's like my dad was saying, Bruce Campbell no longer has his chainsaw hand. He now upgrades to this like metallic robe, like animatronic, I don't even know, hand.
It's supposed to be like a mechanical.
There we go.
Hand that.
Metallic.
Yeah. But it's very bulky in an oven mitt sort of way.
Hey, it's throwing it back to Darkman.
Yeah, exactly. But the special effects guys did all the stuff that leads up to the reveal of the one that he wears. They did all the ratcheting pieces on his forearm and all that stuff.
That you see when he's creating.
Yeah,
it.
When he's building it. And it's just a great montage. And then when it's done, it's this foam latex and you know, it's not metal.
What?
For real. Glove that Bruce could wear, and we just made up a whole bunch of those.
Can you go into deeper detail about creating the Ash robotic hand / like gauntlet?
It was really fun designing all the iterations of Ash's character, but to design the foundational character and also do the template for all of his facial wounds and stuff for continuity was awesome. But obviously, he gets rid of the chainsaw and he has two hands so that he can do stuff. And one of those hands is mechanical. And Bruce Fuller illustrated a couple different ideas. And one of those became the approved design for the gauntlet. And then we focused primarily on the hand from the wrist up. And I believe it was the special effects department and wardrobe handled everything from the wrist down based on Bruce Fuller's designs from Ulterior.
I bet he was maybe relieved to not have a stump.
Well, when he's got the stump, yeah, he's like in the beginning, he's in the what do they call those things, like paddocks or whatever, where it's like the big wooden thing and your hands are in them?
Oh, yes.
It's hilarious because the whole point of those is you can't pull your hand out. And on Bruce's right side, it's just his stump in it.
Which
you could pull right out. So it's really funny. And then Bruce always sort of favors certain angles to the camera, so you can't tell he's got a whole arm
dangling
there
down.
that he's dealing with, and you know, sells it really well. Same with going down into the pit in the beginning before he gets to the chainsaw, and then his hand's in that, which is great because he could, you know, it's got a handle and he can swing it around
the chainsaw.
Yeah. And special effects department built that, and then we did the glove for him to be able to do more than be a one-armed guy.
Yeah.
Through it. And then he uses the chainsaw as more of a tool. But the car becomes his new weapon.
Right.
Basically.
Until he gets distracted by Sheila.
By beautiful Sheila.
But she's evil. She's deadite Sheila.
Not in that moment, though. That's why he's distracted.
I guess. Because women, you know, we're always messing it up for the man.
Apparently.
it's fine. Okay, and so that's pretty straightforward, a glove, things like that. And then when Bruce is running, Ash, I should say, is running from the evil and to this windmill, you pointed out that the windmill is an homage to Frankenstein?
Frankenstein, the windmill in Frankenstein, yeah.
This all makes a lot more sense of what you're saying of evil Ash being sort of a Frankenstein.
That was just kind of my...
interpretation.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I just like, you know, they're getting, it's... husband and wifey out on horseback in the at night, you know, with their skeletal army.
Yes, a romantic stroll.
Let's make them the classic horror husband and wife. So,
I love that.
I leaned into Frankenstein a little bit because he's all chopped up. You know, he gets all chopped up and the pieces come back together and they're.
Oh, right.
You know, we try to do it all sort of mismatched, and he had a rope to tie his jaw back on. We're trying to do this Jacob Marley thing where his jaw was really long. And then he'd tie it back up with this rope, and we had made this foam latex rope. But I think that whole setup to him having the rope on his head kind of got lost in the in the shuffle. You don't see him with it, but it doesn't really read as to what it is because everything's so dark.
Yeah, I guess that's a good note to anybody cosplaying that there's technically a rope there.
Yeah, if you look at the designs that we did of him, Bruce Fuller did a lot of colored pencil sketches.
Of Evil Ash,
yeah. And when we were figuring out the Frankenstein vibe and the coloring, we had a coloring that was really a lot more sort of yellowy, gross, that kind of looked more like Frankenstein-y to me.
Which Frankenstein, though? Technically, Frankenstein's monster.
Right. Frankenstein's monster is supposed to be pale, and he was green when they filmed.
Right.
But I always saw like dead skin with no blood as being sort of like, for whatever reason, I just thought like a more jaundiced yellow with the jet black hair would be really striking. But then you take that outside at night, and it was just too contrasty, and the face was... it stood out too much, and Sheila was already really pale, you know, with darker hair, not to full black, and that balanced out really nicely.
Speaking of evil Sheila, played by Miss Honey from Matilda, what went into her makeup to create that look?
We were trying to keep her sort of Bride of Frankenstein, Elsa Lanchester look, and she had a very young face, so we were trying to get some angles out of that. So we ended up doing a nose tip to point her nose out. And then we also did prosthetics on her cheeks and her forehead to give her more of a skull shape to the eye socket area. And then we obviously used paint to enhance that. And she wore contact lenses. And then we also gave her finger extensions so that her hands could look longer and skinnier, and she could have pointier, creepier fingernails when she was evil Sheila. So it's like, all right, she'll stay pale and then he'll lean a little darker. And Bruce Fuller did a makeup that went more into like browns and stuff into the face. Because the whole bottom half was hit by the shotgun.
Right.
So that's all rough, like pockmarked shit. And his jaw, you know, is kind of messed up and stuff.
And they still get the jaw point across a little bit because he's trying to say a word and then pops his jaw back in and then finally gets it out. But we kind of skipped ahead
a bit.
To Evil Ash. Now, speaking of Evil Ash, let's talk about how he gets there. So he goes into the windmill to...
Good Ash
goes into the windmill to barricade himself against the evil.
Right.
And then he sees himself in the mirror and he bashes it. Why he chooses to bash it with his own head, I don't know.
He kind of runs towards it. He thinks it's a person, I think.
Oh, because I was like, girl, there's so many
tools.
Because
he's in that sort of paranoid
That's
state.
Fair. And
so
then
he goes to like rush this guy and it's a mirror. He hits the mirror and then pieces of the mirror land on the floor.
And then those get possessed by like the demon and they come to life.
His reflections in there are, it's his full body reflection in the
small shards.
Of mirror. So when Bruce walks away, the reflections stay there and then they crawl out of the mirror. And it was just a big set piece with guys with giant cut out pieces of mirror with, you know, another set sort of mocked up behind them. And they just climb out of these holes onto this floor and go running off. And then it's all like sped up stuff to make them look like they're little tiny versions of Bruce Campbell's character, fully in his wardrobe and everything else.
Yes. And when we were watching this, we watched this together, which we should probably do in the future, is I was like, are those all Bruce Campbell? And my dad said, no, it's a bunch of guys with Bruce Campbell's makeup.
Yeah, we did prosthetics on, I think, four guys. Two were like really pretty close matches ultimately. And those two are always the foreground little Bruces.
Little Bruce.
Yeah. And then we made little puppets for a couple scenes too. And so that Bruce could interact with the little ones to scale. And then like they fight and
yes,
one of them gets speared with a fork. And I think we did a little version of him on the floor speared with a fork as well. But then they end up bonking him in the head by leading him into some stuff. He gets knocked out. He wakes up. He's tied up on the floor. And two of the guys press his nose together so that he'll open his mouth to the little guys.
That's what's going on.
And then when he opens his mouth, another little Bruce high dives and dives down into
his mouth,
Bruce Campbell's mouth, and then is inside his body.
Which is really messed up.
Yeah. And that's then he tries up. To bring... drink boiling water to get the
kill
the little guy or whatever. But basically the little guy is essentially evil and possesses
his body,
Bruce's body, Ash's body in a really weird manner. He basically creates a double of Bruce and they split apart, but it goes through a couple of stages. There's a shoulder rig we did where Bruce opens his clothing and there's like an eyeball that opens and looks around and Bruce freaks out. And then we did a baby head that was really disturbing. Isn't in the film. Yeah, that was still inside when he's still inside the windmill before he breaks out of it because he's freaking out. There's a baby head and teeth are starting to grow in it. It's like baby Bruce head. And there's pictures of that that we can show you guys. And then there's like a full-size Bruce head. And Jim McPherson was responsible for sculpting all the heads. And there's a little bit of Jim McPherson in that sculpture, I have to say.
Sculpt what you know.
But it's like a rig, like we did on Adam's Family with a two-headed guy, you know.
Oh,
but,
yes.
But this being Sam and Bruce, they wanted the possessed one to punch Bruce, like they're fighting while the second one is growing. So we had it on like just like a fishing line and we're just like smacking Bruce with the fake hand basically. So they're kind of duking it out while the second one's growing. And then it turned into Bruce and a stunt guy strapped together, like crab walking on all fours through the woods. And then they get to the point where they split. And then at that point, when they're totally separate from each other. Then it can be
two Bruce.
Bruce playing both parts. Yeah.
Yes.
And his clothing magically reproduces. His shoes, everything is all.
Everything. It just isn't even torn. That just was a clean break somehow.
Yeah. So it's all, you know, it's an exact double. And then.
And that's evil Ash.
That's the evil one. Yeah. And good Ash eventually pulls out a shotgun and sticks it basically over his mouth and blows
his mouth off.
This part off. Yeah. So it's just this pockmarked riddled thing.
What does pockmark mean?
Pitted, like holes.
Oh, got you.
You know, but it's buckshot pitted basically because it was a shotgun.
I'm not familiar with the gun world.
It's a shotgun. So it's all full of BBs. Ew. So it's all these BB holes. So they're all the size of BBs. And I think we actually stuck some BBs. We, meaning Bruce Fuller, stuck some BBs into some of the little holes. But Evil Ash is dead and Good Ash isn't going to like risk anything. So he pulls Evil Ash into, I guess, the windmill again.
Oh, yeah.
Straps him down, uses the chainsaw to cut him up, then buries all the parts. And when he pours all the parts in, we had to make a dummy head of Bruce minus the, you know, with the messed up jaw that gets thrown in, and then we had to do that makeup on Bruce through the bottom of the hole so the head could open its eyes and talk, and then it all gets buried, and you think, you know, that would theoretically be the end of it, but
not in this universe.
Not to be.
It was only the beginning.
And then he comes out and he's so magically rotten at that point.
He really rotted fast. Yeah. Guys, time moves fast when
evil,
you're dying.
Evil rots very heartily.
Yes. Apparently. Deadites, you know, they're on their own time.
Yeah.
Their own time frame. Also, to speak to Evil Ash, in the part of the movie when Good Ash is chainsawing and chopping up Evil Ash, it's sort of this genesis of Evil Ash's look later on. And you were saying that you guys had to design a bodysuit for that?
Yeah, we actually did a diagram of his full body because we created the head, the prosthetics for his head with the chainsaw sections cut apart but lining up improperly. And then we did the same thing on his gloves. We had the fingers misaligned and then sections of the hand and the forearm kind of shift on each other so parts aren't in complete alignment. And then we work with the wardrobe department and we did a design for them that showed where all the chainsaw cuts would be on his body. And then we also illustrated where the ones would be through the wardrobe. And we actually made prosthetic cuts that like wrap around prosthetics that could either be sewn into the wardrobe in a second layer or could go on a spandex bodysuit, whatever the wardrobe department wanted to do to make it easier to maintain.
And so then Evil Ash comes back with his army of the dead because Good Ash didn't say the words to the book right. And
there's a whole story there, too.
Exactly. There's a lot of pieces. So
there's a whole bunch of makeup effects there, too.
Yes. Yes. That's like the origin of Evil Ash. But to go back to like the makeup and how you guys were talking about yellow or the colors of it, was that sort of like the starting point? Because you are right, like he does rot very fast, like he progresses very fast. So how did you guys come to that conclusion of like
I think
final?
When he was more monochromatic, it didn't read as rotten. It read more dead, but not necessarily so rotten. But the bottom half of his face is all blasted away, so
skeleton.
Yeah, that the contrast there was ridiculous as well. So it's like, all right, let's just pull a lot of the colors together.
And what was the look is really iconic. He has this like skull head dress like thing.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Were you working as closely as you normally would with, say, the costume designer for this?
We didn't really work with them. We just took the head, the helmet when they made it, and then we changed the eye openings on it because it was very much of a blank skull sort of open eye thing. And we just angled the upper brows down so that it looked meaner because Sam had said he wanted to do this thing where a lot of times Bruce's character as Evil Ash was revealed by him rising up in a frame from behind something.
Oh.
Like when he gets set on fire and he comes back as a skeleton, you see the helmet come up first, and then you see,
I see
his face. So we tweaked it, and then we had to mold all the armor pieces, and we had to mold the book because we had to make lightweight versions, because we also had to build the skeleton puppet version of Evil Ash once comes back from being set on fire.
You said a lot of things. I'll be honest with you. You said a lot of things. Didn't follow any of it. What? Okay, so the book. You made molds of the book?
We had to make molds of the book because the skeleton version of Evil Ash carries it around. So it had to be super lightweight.
I see, because a skeleton puppet is carrying it. Okay. Yeah,
and then the skeleton puppet also had all of the armor on it, and we didn't want it to be real metal. So Bill Sturgeon was the main artist responsible for the skeleton, and he ran all the armor. You know, we molded all the armor and cast it in fiberglass, and then Bill Sturgeon was responsible for mounting that all on the puppet that he and Dave Penicus had built, which was a full-sized animatronic puppet that had like a slave controller. You'd stand behind it, and when you moved your arms, the puppet would move its arms at the same time. But we had a sword mounted in one of the arms because it was built for sword fighting Bruce Campbell more than anything, you know. So we did the skeletal Evil Ash, and then Camby did all the rest of the skeletons that were the army of the dead. And some of what they did were puppets, same sort of style, and then they also did full body suits on stunt guys for fighting and stuff like that. Then there were also the animation puppets that were stop motion by another company.
My head hurts just listening to
it. Yeah, so the idea was, you know, trying to make it all match. And then Sam wanted to do some like sort of visual gags with our skeleton version of Evil Ash and have him get punched and his head spins around and it stops facing front, but the eyes are still spinning like a slot machine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they both stopped forward. And then he had another one where the puppet realizes he's going to get blown up. And he opens his mouth really big to go, whoa. And the top of his head opens up and they put like a steam whistle noise in it. So there was obviously some really cartoony stuff in it. But that was all, as far as all the mechanics for that, that was mostly Bill and Dave Penicus.
It's interesting because you name these people and how they had to do this, but like, how is that accomplished? Through just robotics or?
Yeah, the slave system was really pretty straightforward. It's sort of the same methodology that we would use for Chucky when he's like a full-bodied puppet and his arms and everything are moving and we don't want to see a puppeteer in the shot. When it came down to the close-up heads, it's a variation on the same mechanics for some of it, where it's just a cable and a spring to open the top of the head or open the jaw and stretch it really down further. But the machinery for things like the head spinning around and being able to stop, the motor for that, and then the motors in the eyes to make them continue to spin and then stop on a dime, that's all a little bit more precision oriented, and it's really the mechanical wizardry of Dave and Bill that made it happen.
Wow.
Yeah, and there were a lot of puppets, and there were puppet hands. There were puppet skeletal Ash hands to pick up the book and stuff like that. And then we had a version of the puppet full body that was cast in rigid foam and posed that could sit on the catapult.
Oh,
for the very end, goodness. Holding the book, you know, but well, he gets his arm sliced off and the book and the arm like fall, but then the skeleton gets launched into the air and it blows up. So we launched it, and then
you actually launched the skeleton.
Yeah. It didn't, you know, it didn't matter how far it went because
you're like, here we go, girl.
Yeah.
Bye.
But it was super light. It was mounted on a little platform and they weighted it and it's in a fixed pose, and it was just like, all
did
right.
You set like explode it for real?
No, the explosion they added is that like later. It's a composite.
How many times did you chuck your skeleton off the catapult?
It was a couple times. I remember we would always go to set with boxes of parts because we didn't know what Sam was gonna want, and we wanted to have every option available. So it's like, all right, if that one you know, fell apart, or if he decided he wants to actually blow one up, we've got more parts. We'll put together another one.
Goodness.
Yeah, it was, there was a lot. And then, you know, when the puppet's fighting up on the, what do you call it, the parapet or whatever of the castle, there's times where Garrett Immel, who did Evil Sheila's makeup, was actually wearing it on a backpack, doing the body language. And then, you know, they'd frame above him, and then other people were doing like levers and stuff like that. And poor Garrett. It was pretty hefty, and he was a good sport about it.
Really heavy.
And then other times we had it on this like sort of rolling stand, sort of along the lines of like a sculpture stand, you know, with wheels on it.
Oh, so
So if it was framed above the waist, because the hero puppet went to like the beginning of the thighs. So we could sort of roll that around and, you know, do this with Bruce. And there's a lot.
There's so much. Yeah. I'm also thinking like watching this on set is probably the jankiest
it was crazy
thing ever. You got guys with backpacks. You got wheeling skeletons around. But then the ultimate product is really cool.
Yeah. And like the when the skeletons are marching towards the castle, K&B had them dig trenches. K&B had puppeteers with backpack rigs with skeletons above as like the army or the musicians or whatever. So there were people walking in trenches that were lower than the ground.
That's smart.
So that the puppet head would be the same level as people that were standing on the ground. Jeez. So the first row against camera would be the puppets, and behind them would be like the best level of stunt looking stuff. And then in the background would be people that are more like, it's more about wardrobe and maybe a skeleton mask or something like
and
that.
Like moving
so
weird.
So there were levels, and it was night, and it was just all about trying to shoot smart. But if you're one of those people that are really into armor and following, you know, what designs come from what areas and stuff like that, you'll notice that everybody's wearing a mishmash of whatever was available for rent at that time period that we shot this.
Whatever was around in 1992.
Yeah, because there were so many people in the frame that had to have armor.
Yeah.
It was like, what's available and how do we make this work?
Because it's not only the skeletons, it's also all the knights and
the humans, yeah. Yeah. And then you have the two factions of humans.
Right.
As well.
The redhead Henry.
Yeah.
And
the Irish
Arthur.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. So with digging the trenches and stuff, it's basically like a fucked up version of the Muppets. Like,
yeah.
With an army.
Yeah, you're right.
Army of fucked up dead skeleton Muppets.
Muppets. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And then K&B was making tons of them to blow up, and they were actually practically blowing
up. Oh, yeah. They blow up a lot of those. Yeah. That's wild. I feel like I just digested so much of what you're saying, and I don't even know where to begin to.
There's just a lot. It was just, you know, out in the desert in the middle of the night.
The
sun's
summer?
Eventually coming up.
Right.
So it's like there's this ticking clock that you can't beat. Sam always called it the attack of the blue gels because the sky was turning blue, and he's like, oh, everything's, the color value is changing. And then all of a sudden all these tarps and flags and stuff would go up, and they would make like a little tent to try and get a couple more close-ups.
That's smart.
Before they had to break for the day, you know?
Yeah. I saw somewhere online, because I was asking you how many days you think that they had. I saw something of like, I watched a behind-the-scenes thing on the internet today, and they said like 100. I don't think that's real.
I don't think that's possible.
I don't think you can have that many days. No. I hope that for everybody.
For $11 million, how do you get 100 days out of that?
Yes, which we put it in the inflation calculator. And for 1992, that's about $24 million to today's money.
Yeah.
Yes, which is still like with everything they're doing, I'm like, absolutely.
It's insane. And then there's all the castle.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was a painting.
A matte painting?
I think it was. But there was this Introvision system that was sort of like front projection. And there's a lot of stuff that happens. It'd be like rear screen photography, you know, rear screen projection behind somebody. But it was actually more like front screen. And it worked really well. I think the only thing comparable today would be like an LED wall.
Yeah. See, I still don't even understand this. So let's talk about this. This is called Introvision.
Yeah. And they had a stage in downtown Hollywood and we shot some of Darkman there. And then we used it again on this.
So you use this technology on Darkman as well?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For like up in the scaffolding and
totally
all that stuff. Oh. It worked great at night. And then like, I think when Bruce is in the cemetery, we shot a cemetery set at the Introvision stages. And that's where we did all the stretchy makeups face and makeup stuff with the book that flies. But that's also, they were launching tombstones.
Oh, right.
As well. There's so much stuff in like every frame of this movie.
It's crazy.
It's so ambitious. And it's amazing that they
finished it. And they finished it on time, I heard.
Yeah. And Bruce Campbell lived.
And he lived. He did go to the hospital, but he's alive. Yeah. And then went on to do the TV show.
Yeah.
Ash versus Evil Dead. Yeah. But so explain how this works. It's a projector.
The best I understand it is rear screen projection. There would be a translucent screen behind you and they would have a projector behind it projecting onto the screen. And then you would be filming the person standing in front of that screen.
Okay.
With this background being projected like behind you.
Backlit.
Introvision puts you into it more. And it's more like a 3M material screen where it's like the glass beads that reflect like signs out on the highway that reflect light.
Oh.
But they were projecting footage forward onto that screen. Yet you're standing in front of that screen.
How does it not get projected onto you?
That's the part I don't recall.
I don't recall. That's crazy.
But that's the essence of Introvision is it's a more immersive version of rear screen.
And basically, essentially what it's doing is compositing plates together of the actor acting live action in front of it and then the plate.
Well, you're shooting it again.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So you're just filming it.
You film it twice.
You film the background.
Yes.
And then you film the person in front of the background.
And that was
then they're in the same shot together.
I see. And that's what they did specifically a lot for the shots they had done of the stop motion skeleton army and then put it into the same environment as the live action actor.
Yeah.
I need a full documentary about this. I don't understand it. It's so awesome.
There's a lot in this, yeah.
And I don't obviously that's sort of gone away because we have LED walls.
And compositing. I mean, this is a way to do compositing in camera instead of taking two images and cutting out somebody and sticking it in front of it. And now you can put the image that you want them, the environment that you want them to be in on an LED wall and the camera moves with it. And
that's crazy.
It's so real, you know, like all the Star Wars TV shows.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Mandalorian.
So
also speaking to when Ash is picking the Necronomicon and picking the different ones and they're the wrong ones and he comes out and he's stretching in different places. Can you talk more to like the hands and the arms? Because I see there's behind the scenes photos of these arms, these stretchy arms as well. And I like, where even is that?
Okay, so when Bruce opens the wrong book, the idea is the power of the book is sucking him into the book. So we had a close-up hand that was a cast of Bruce's hand that had mechanics in it that started to stretch the fingers out straight forward. And that was held down towards the hole inside the book. And we just stretched those fingers. Once he's pulled all the way in, he's trying to get out. We had prosthetics on his face, two different stages of stretch, basically. And it was sort of an inner space sort of transformation to get back to the state of normal, where Sam took advantage of the extremeness of it and did some cool, it almost looks animated the way it's done. But before he gets pulled all the way into the book, there's a shot where he's trying to pull back and you realize that he's pulled back longer than the length of his arms, but his arms are actually still in the book. And Bruce actually wore a body rig for that, where his real arms were behind his back. And then off the shoulders were these fake arms that were super long and the fingers were extended. And we even did a glove, you know, the mechanical hand was on one of those, and we did a stretched version of that.
Wow. It's crazy how much I'm sure Sam had to prep and like camera and everybody for this. And I can't
storyboard
imagine.
So everybody could understand what was in his head.
Yeah.
You know, we would ask for scenes storyboarded, like the stretchy face. Like, is this, you want a close up of a hand and then you want a wide shot and then you want a shot from in the book looking out.
Oh, yeah.
Looking out the hole towards Bruce, you know, and we just want to make sure we're making everything
right
that he needed, because the shooting pace was so fast. And then when it got to stuff like evil Ash fights good Ash, and it's a sword fight and there's swords connecting, then we took the stunt coordinator and made him into evil Ash. There was a version that fit him.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Bruce could fight him.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, Chris was the stunt coordinator on Darkman.
Okay.
And he was used on this one. And then he also played the stunt version of Evil Ash.
They did a good job. That was intense, yeah. sword fighting.
It was really well choreographed. I mean, the stuff with Bruce on the stairs and he's fighting two people at the same time and the camera's on it for a while. It's like, you know, they obviously worked at what they were doing and did it well.
Yeah.
So,
wow. I don't even know where to go after that.
I'd be interested in watching this movie with no sound.
Yeah.
Because there's so much going on with the music and the sound effects, you know. I think it would, you know how sound is such a big part of horror. I think it's a big part of this comedy as well.
Yes.
And yeah. There's some scenes that are just downright Three Stooges, like the skeletons in the graveyard.
Yes.
You know, poking in the eyes and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of little homages to things past.
I heard, I went to go see Clown in a Cornfield recently, which is out in theaters right now if you want to go watch it. But, you know, support independent filmmaking.
Yeah.
I think they're independent. Enough, you know, they don't have high studio budgets, so go support indie horror. But there was this guy there who I'm friends with on social media. His username is Final Guy Chris with a K, and he has a Evil Dead podcast.
Really?
And he was talking to me about just the lore of Evil Dead 1, 2, and then Army of Darkness. And he was telling me that there were guys who were on Evil Dead 2 and then came out and, you know, were also on Army of Darkness. And some of them were saying maybe something to the likeness of, you know, I thought this was going to be, you know, scary. I signed up to do an Evil Dead movie. And
yeah.
And
well, you'll notice it's not called Evil Dead.
Yes, and it was supposed to be called The Medieval Dead.
Right. There were a couple of different endings shot, too.
Yes, and I just watched online the original ending that was shot of Bruce Ash takes the potion to go to sleep, and then he oversleeps and wakes up in, like, dystopian...
The future?
Apocalypse future.
Yeah, and he's got a giant beard. And
yeah.
Everything. There was also a version where he and Sheila go to the future together.
Oh.
But something fucked up and she's a corpse. And he's an old man alone in the future.
So did somebody build a corpse?
I think we just took a dead body we already had.
A fake dead
car.
Body.
Yeah.
A fake dead body.
Yeah. But like really emaciated, you know, like been dried out for a couple hundred years.
is that anywhere you could find online?
I don't think so.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm surprised that the one where he's actually old is out there.
I think it's on some behind the scenes like DVD.
And he's in the car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
He caves himself in a cave.
Right.
I don't know why. Like, yeah. I guess you would think you're safe in there, but like, this is hundreds of years we're talking about.
It's kind of like the movie The Time Machine.
Or Idiocracy.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
That's interesting. So there's a version in the universe where Sheila went with him and then she died.
Yeah. She's in the cave and apparently she didn't take enough. So when he wakes up, she's long dead.
Does he cry or?
I don't think so.
He doesn't.
I don't remember.
He's just like, ugh.
But that's sort of a little nod to Planet of the Apes.
Oh, okay. So, that's cool. You know, and ultimately the studio
to me,
came.
It's a nod to Planet of the Apes.
True. And then ultimately the studio came in and recut and was like, here, do this ending, basically.
I don't know how it played out because Sam had a really great degree of autonomy on that.
That's unfortunate. But that's how we ended up, regardless of how it played out, that's how we get the actual ending of the S-Mart.
Yeah.
And this one random lady that shows up who is a deadite, and then he kills her and saves this random woman he just met 2 minutes ago, and then like scoops her up in his arms, and then he's like, I'm the king.
Yeah.
And then they kiss, and I'm like, do you even know her name? Do you even know her name? She doesn't know your name.
Yeah. And I think the idea behind that ending was everybody was a lot, you know, there's potential for a sequel, I think.
Totally. And
that
it's
was
very,
my take on it.
Okay. Yeah. And it's very Ash. It's very Ash.
Yeah.
You know,
you end on a high note for him being.
And he's got a new shirt. He's got a new look. Yeah. He's ready to go face more. But then nothing happened. He doesn't come back until
does it
way later. And then they did Evil Dead in 2012, 2013.
Yeah, they did some reboots and then he comes back in the TV series.
Yeah, but not the, there's a new one coming out. Evil Dead something.
I don't know what it is.
But Evil Dead Rise was the last one, I think.
Movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But Bruce is only in the TV show.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I wonder how I'd be curious to dive more into like the lore of fans of like how they feel about that, because Ash Williams is like the guy, you know?
Yeah. But I'd be curious as to what Bruce wanted to do, you know. I think we probably burned him out on prosthetics.
That's true.
And if we didn't do it on our own, we were part of cumulative
trauma.
Yeah.
But Bruce should come on our podcast. And
talk about it.
Talk about his experience.
Oh.
And also, you guys haven't seen each other in a while.
No. Ran into him at a convention.
Yes.
That was about it.
Son of Monsterpalooza.
Yeah.
Speaking of Monsterpalooza, it is coming up at the end of May into June in Pasadena. And we will be there doing a panel on my upcoming horror feature called Slay. And we'll be there with, I directed the film and Jimmy Simpson wrote the film and my dad did. He killed some people. He did.
Made a mask,
our killer's mask with Brian Christensen, who will also be there. Mm-hmm. And we might potentially have somebody from the cast there as well. But I can't say anything just yet. But our panel is on that Sunday, June 1st at 1 p.m. And I think Exhibit Hall C, the theater, where all the panels are, basically. So if you'd like to come support us and the movie, we'll give you a bit of insight into making it. And then we'll have some special news there that you'll want to follow.
And you might have some freebies.
And I might have some freebies. Yes. Who knows?
We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. And then... also, you'll have a booth there the whole weekend?
Yeah, Super Cool and Alterian will have a booth together. And we'll have some of our Return of Living Dead products and a bunch of other pieces of art and stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Go check it. Do you know what booth number?
I do not.
Okay. Well, you will, you know, follow us on social media and then you'll know what booth number it is. But they'll be there. And then I might be there with some Living with Chucky merchandise a little bit, because I definitely tag team onto my dad's booth and I have no shame about that.
And it's the Pasadena Convention Center.
Yes. Now that that's what's happening upcoming. Yeah. But and we'll also be recording it as a live podcast episode.
So then we're going to film the panel at Monsterpalooza as an episode of this podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
So if you want to come support our podcast and my upcoming feature, please come see us at the Pasadena Convention Center for Monsterpalooza. We would love the support. Indie filmmaking and horror especially relies on you guys, the fans. So please come see us. And that's what we have for this month. And we'll see you next month. We'll hopefully see you there.
Live in person.
Live in person at Monsterpalooza.
And you can ask us weird questions.
Yes, please do. Bye.
All right. Bye.